Hello and welcome to The Two Tones. It's episode 3, Tony Moclair and Tony DeBolfo. How are you going, Tone?
How are you, Tone? Nice to see you.
You too. Well, I wish we were meeting in more auspicious circumstances.
Yes, it wasn't great, was it?
It really wasn't after the first quarter.
No, I mean, I thought signs were promising early. I mean, we seemed committed to the contest and were really up for the game. And then when Richmond lifted its work rate, we couldn't seem to find a way to counter it.
What happened?
I wish I knew, because I mean,
they were getting a lot of run off half back.
They were
lines easily.
They were pushing up pretty strongly to Richmond, and I just felt we couldn't find a way. We couldn't find a way to counter it. And a lot of our players appeared to drift back into their shells. And unfortunately, you know, we were playing catch-up for pretty much most of the rest of the contest. So it wasn't a great afternoon to start the season, was it?
No, it wasn't. But we do say congratulations to the Tigers, 15-15-105, defeating the Blues 11-12-78. Now, you stayed for the whole game, obviously. Now, Carlton supporters, we have long memories, and we have seen this sort of game before. It's the first game of the season, 82,000 people, absolutely fantastic turnout. It was magnificent, and unfortunately, getting to see Daisy do his shoulder in the first 5 minutes was probably a bad omen. We were talking just before the podcast about the number of people who streamed out in the last quarter, and what I find interesting is that they always use a goal by the opposition as their cue to leave.
Yes, and people have made a career of it, really, when you reflect back on moments in time. Because, I mean, I'm sure you've been to games too, and I've been there, where, you know, there might be a premiership riding on the next kick or the next, you know, one percenter.
Yeah.
And they'll still bail out to get the train home before the mad rush. I've never quite understood that, Tony. 22-minute mark, you can put them down, whatever state of play the game's in. Off they go, and
got to beat the traffic.
it's a strange bizarre. One. It is a bizarre one, but people have made it into an art form over the years, and I'll never know why.
Well, if you're wearing the jumper, I always wear a jumper to the game. That's almost like a contract that you have with the club. For good or ill, you stay to the bitter end.
No, that's true, because it's character building, and it certainly, you know, Friday night's game was. Thursday night's game was character building.
Yes.
You know, first game for the year, and you have to weather it. As you say, you take the good with the bad, and it was just such a shame that, you know, such anticipation was met with that, you know, anti-climax. But as you say, you know, fantastic to see 83,000 people in the MCG. And
I wish all of them were Carlton members, just quietly.
True.
Now, Tone, you went down to the rooms afterwards in your capacity as Carlton media man.
Man about town. Yeah. I was down there, Tone. You know, it was a little bit sombre, as you can expect. Managed to get to interview two of the players, two of the Carlton boys from the match. Simon White, who I must give an honourable mention to for his game on Dustin Martin.
Yep.
Credit to Whitey, dropped 5 kilos over the summer, which has enabled him to play that run with role that he might otherwise not have been able to fulfil. Did a great job on Dustin Martin, and you mentioned the Thomas incident. Well, Simon White got that knock from Deledio at the first bounce, if memory serves, so he had to find a way through that. Pretty heavy hit to do a great job on Dustin Martin. Spoke to him after the game, and I also caught up with Christian Jacks, who was Christian Jacks. Yarks, I might say, Tony, is the correct pronunciation.
Yarks.
Yes, I'm trying to get that going. He was pretty upbeat. He's an upbeat, you know, fairly effervescent character. Was terrific in the after match. Just for a quick word. And then I found out a day or two later he actually suffered 2 broken ribs. So he didn't show any discomfort in the interview. Maybe he was holding his breath, but I take my hat off to him. Yeah, it gives you a real idea of what these guys have to endure in 100 minutes of footy.
So were you punching him because you weren't happy with his answers? Or what? Did you have any role in those broken ribs, Tone?
I'm pretty sure I was at arm's length of young Christian, but if I happened to wield a wayward fist in anger of Christian, I vehemently apologised.
Oh, there you go. So that was his debut game, wasn't it?
For Carlton, yes. It was. Yeah, yeah. Boy from GWS. And, you know, looks like a player of the future. Certainly the back six, at least, Tony, is a, you know, rebounding, athletic, key position defender.
And what did you get out of Whitey?
Well, I thought Whitey, you know, as I said, was terrific in his role and really relished the opportunity to play a different role, not something to which he would have been accustomed for the most part of his career, either here or at back home in the West. So, you know, I think Simon White, to his credit, has worked hard on the track to get his body right, to give him the chance to play these run with roles. Mm. So he's become a more versatile player for Carlton, and that's got to be a good thing for Mick Moles and the team.
Any idea of his times? You know, is his, how he goes over 100 metres or a kilometre or 2 kilometres?
Yeah, I don't know how he went on the you know, the circuit here of Royal Parade. They've always kept those times pretty close to their chest here, the high performance managers. But look, I mean, if you look at him, physically speaking, he certainly fine down compared to the player that he was, you know, 12 months ago. And all power to him. He's moving well, and you can see the results the way he goes about his business. It's really good.
Previewing round two now, Tone. The Blues go over to Domain Stadium. Used to be Patterson Stadium for anybody keeping track.
Rolls off the tongue, doesn't it, Tone?
It does, Domain Stadium. So Friday night. Now, you've got to say, there has been some, I mean, as there has been against, you would say, pretty much every club in the AFL, but some particularly memorable matches, Carlton v West Coast. They have produced some absolute bald hairers, if I can use that term on a family podcast, Tone.
It's quite all right, that too, with me, Tony. Yes, we can go back to the 90s. I think, you know, if you're going to isolate three particular contests, and I know we have a, you know, a discerning audience of listeners that are really onto any facts and figures here. I've got to be careful.
Yes, but speaking of which, sorry to interrupt, Tom, but you have to make an apology a little later on, don't you?
I will.
About an omission to do with last week's. But anyway.
Yes, you're quite right. But in reference to the games you're talking about, those massive mega contests, you're probably looking at that, you know, that great, last great golden era that Carlton had, mid-90s.
Yeah.
And the games, the two games that were held over there, I think one in 93, when Mainwaring, the late Chris Mainwaring,
yes,
had that shot for goal late in the game, went the banana kick from the boundary line and missed, that gave Carlton a pretty narrow win.
I think it was one point.
Just remember watching the game from home and jumping out of the chair. I think you've got a memory of
I was there the day. Well, yeah, no, I was in Melbourne. I was working as a waiter at the Black Cat in Brunswick Street in Fitzroy and listening to it on a pair of headphones. And when the siren went and it missed, I just stopped in the street and did a fist pump to myself and then kept walking. It was just a great moment.
Yes, it was a great moment, a great game of footy, as you say. And 95, 2 years later, the premiership year, I think we got him again over there.
Yep.
And Dean Rice, if memory serves, might have drifted forward and kicked the winning goal. I can remember the goal being kicked, the ball coming back to the centre. You know, there was less than a kick in at Carlton up, and Craig Bradley got this magnificent clearance from that last bounce, forced the ball over the boundary line. Probably couldn't get away with it now, you'd be pinged for deliberate.
Yeah.
But I do remember that play just sealing a meritorious victory. And the other one, I think, was the famous Cooter game.
Which has become one of the I was there games.
Oh, absolutely.
To Carlton supporters. I know my brother was there and still talks about it.
Well, we talked about Christian Yarks playing, you know, as that rebounding centre-half back. I could suggest to Christian that he gets hold of the tape of that particular game to see how an imperious centre-half back can actually turn into a performance.
Well, the way it's been talked about is that if a Brownlow medal could be won in a single game, it would be this game. It would be Cooter's virtuoso performance.
Well, it was 18 marks, was it not? I think 18 marks.
Statistics barely tell half the story of how dominant he was.
18 marks in that game. The game that was also controversial, if memory serves, when Tony Evans kicked the ball through the Carlton goals.
Yeah.
And it was awarded a goal to Greg Williams.
Yes, I remember. No, do you know why? Because Diesel started celebrating in front of the umpire. Diesel, as soon as it went through, Diesel put his arms up and ran and started celebrating, and everyone else gathered around him and celebrated with him. And in all that confusion, the goal umpire, I think, just went, oh, well, Diesel must have kicked it then. That's a goal.
And
there was a protest. West Coast were protesting, obviously, but yes, to no avail, thank God.
The goal umpire, Uncle Roy Williams, related to the great man, I suspect. But, they're three powerhouse games. And, you know, if Carlton wanted to release a box set of classics,
yeah,
those three would make the cut, no doubt. Brilliant performances. You talk about Kudafidis with the 18-mark game. There was a famous game, Tone, back in 27.
Yeah.
Carlton versus Collingwood at Victoria Park. Just, I'll put my history hat on for a moment.
Please.
There was a player from, he came from up near Bacchus Marsh, if memory serves, Alec Duncan.
Which would have been a 7-day horse and dray trip back then.
It was. Who, depending on which reports you go by, took as many as 33 marks.
What?
In that game at Victoria Park. Bearing in mind that 1927 was the first of four premierships on the trot that Collingwood took out. So they were playing a hot team on their own dunghill. And so famous was that match that it has been since dubbed Duncan's match. And the Collingwood players, after that game, presented Alex Duncan with the football. So revered was that performance, that individual performance by Alex Duncan. And not long ago, through Luca Ganano, their digital manager, Alex Duncan's descendant from Queensland had made contact with the club to say that they still have that football. So we're hoping that we might be able to get it down here on display at some stage, the famous football from Duncan's match.
Well, what an extraordinarily gracious gesture from Collingwood.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know where that grace went ensuing 75 years, Tony, but there you have it.
No, there you go. It turned from giving us the football to giving us Mick McGowan. Thanks for nothing. There is a great, as we said, a great history between the two clubs. The most consecutive victories against West Coast, 4. Greatest margin, 119 points. Highest score that we've ever kicked against them, 27-19, 191 in 1987. That was their debut year, if memory serves correctly. Lowest score against them, 4-15-39, 2007. Could have kicked a little straighter that day, Tone.
It must have been played at the Western Oval, was it?
yes, I blame the wind. So how are we going to win and how are we going to bounce back from last week, Tone?
Well, look, you know, I think you've hit it on the head, Tony, that, you know, the players to a man should be steeled into, atoning for, you know, what was an indifferent performance, to say the least, after quarter time. West Coast too have been hit with injury. I suspect the team, our team, will have to make two enforced changes through injury. But West Coast has been severely hit by injury to key personnel.
Well, that's mainly in the back line, isn't it?
It is. Yep. It is indeed. And of course, how the team, sets up. Will be determined by the conditions. We don't know yet. Again, that vexed question will face Mick Malthouse and the coaching panel. Do you go in with the three tall forwards, particularly if it's wet? Mm. These are things that they'll have to weigh up. All you could say, Tony, here is that you just want a committed four-quarter performance from the visiting team this week. Mm. People be looking on. You know, Mick and the whole team has been the subject of focus basically from the final siren on Thursday night, so there'll be a lot of players keen to atone for a bad one. Hopefully it was just the cobwebs being dusted off last week, and we'll see a more committed showing over a four quarter period.
You mentioned tall forwards. If it is wet, that's the role for the crumbing forward, obviously, and there's going to be howling about Eddie Betts and the fact that he's not with us anymore. Who's going to step in and play that role then?
Look, it's a good question. You know, I, it may fall to someone like Troy Menzel.
Yep.
Is David Allard ready to go? I'm not sure. But, I mean, he's the player that, you know, you'd normally pencil in for a couple around goals as your, traditional crummer. So, but notwithstanding the crummer, Carlton are going to have to manufacture goals from everywhere else. You know, it didn't happen last week. The players have got to find a way, and you've just got to hope that our return is going to come from a collective effort from a lot of players, not just one or two that are around the goal mouth.
What about Tutt? Is that crumbing forward?
Yeah, well, Jason Tutt, you know, had a reasonably good pre-season, and I personally thought it was a little bit stiff not to get a gig against Richmond. The vast expanses of domain will suit Jason Tutt, so I suspect that he would be right up there in the mix in terms of getting a call-up for the Eagles contest.
I would say probably unusually, considering how far it is to go and the fact that we're playing West Coast on their home turf. Carlton, as we've said, do have a good record over there. We do seem to step up and play well in the West. So you'd certainly back us, or, you know, we're better than an even shot, surely, at this game?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and as I say, you know, you'd like to think there's a steely resolve amongst the players going across this week to attain for that performance against the Tigers. So, you know, as a supporter looking on, you and I and every other supporter and member listening just wants to see a red hot performance from you know, all the players collectively. So let's hope that that's what we get.
Now, we are not without sin or fault ourselves on the two tones, because last week we mentioned a group of players who played for Carlton with the name of Tony. I want to get to your apology, but first...
it's grovelly. It's grovelly, trust me.
Your apology tone, because there was an omission. However, before we get there, Tone, I want to go through players who have played for both Carlton and the West Coast.
Yes, well, for fear of an oversight yet again, I'll put my head on the block. Lucas prepared an interesting list of players who fit the bill in both respects. Peter Higgins, Tone, 1983 to 85 at Carlton, and then 89 at the Eagles. Gee, you're testing the memory here. You know, Matt Clappe, well...
I remember him well, number six.
Number six.
Premiership player.
What a great, honest, hard-nut player he was. Yep. You know, if you look at the Premiership year of 95, which I might say is featuring round by round through the course of this season now through the Carlton Football Club website, you see all those one percenters, and Matt Clappe, you know, with the smothers and the, you know, throwing the body into the into the contest. We had hard nuts on every line, like Matt Clappe, and a great player who absolutely got the most out of his career and was rewarded with the ultimate prize in 1995 as
very
part of the
well
record
deserved.
Breakers. Yeah. Great player. Damien Hampson, was on the scene very briefly with both Carlton and the Eagles. Callum Chambers, we recall, played a few games here midway through the early 2000s. Then you've got a couple of handy types, Chris Judd, Josh Kennedy.
Who's disappeared into obscurity. We've never heard of him again after his time at the Eagles.
Yes.
Where he was delisted for lack of form, I believe.
Yes. There's a story going around, Tone, that that this week the Carlton cheer squad are actually using the taping was used on Chris Judd's shoulder to prop the Eagles up through their premiership years. Have you heard that one?
Yes, that's a reference to that great sledge of his in the first game against West Coast.
Yes, Josh Kennedy, a little personal thing, Josh Kennedy's father, Jamie Kennedy, is an old schoolmate of mine from Parade College. He was a fabulous basketballer, Jamie. Played for the Canberra Cannons, I think, when Phil Smythe was going around.
Yep.
And they actually talked Jamie into playing for Parade in the Herald Shield final against Assumption. It was probably 1980, I think it was.
Yeah.
Jamie kicked five at full forward in that game, having played basketball all year. The problem was the bloke at the other end for Assumption, Simon O'Donnell, kicked eight. So, Josh, you know, I mean, you look at that deal, Josh Kennedy, Chris Judd, you'd probably have to say it's been a win-win. I mean, you know, Chris Judd, well, what do you say? He's been a Leviathan for the Carlton Football Club. Josh Kennedy, still got some way of his career to play out, but you'd have to say he's been a pretty good player for the Eagles as well. Wish we had them both, but you can't be so greedy. Why?
Well, yes, depending on who you speak to, apparently we could have. But anyway, that's that's one for the history books. What I always remember about Josh Kennedy, though, and I've said it on the podcast before, this is a measure of how esteemed he was at the club. The first Carlton West Coast game after he went over to West Coast, and he was sad about leaving Carlton. The at the conclusion of the match, I think, pretty sure West Coast won, Josh Kennedy was mobbed by his ex-teammates. I mean, that really says something about the bloke.
Yeah, I mean, he was a popular figure here at Carlton, and I'm sure Judd was just as revered by his own at West Coast. So, you know, it's not often that deals got right, you know, that both players have fared better at their new clubs, but you'd have to say in this instance, it's, as I said earlier, it was a win-win for both clubs and both players. Carlton have been the beneficiary of one of the greats of the game, so you have to be happy with it.
Now, I did promise the correction. We like to be held accountable here on the two tones.
Yes, well, me a culpa, Tony. I take full responsibility for this. Yes, you mentioned the naming of the Carlton team of tones last week, and I got two polite letters, I guess. One from Trent Main, whose grandfather was Ronnie Vincent, Carlton's head trainer for 35 years, and the man who famously or infamously, depending on how you look at it, threw the ball at Mike Patterson, the late Mike Patterson, Richmond, after he decked Brian Quirk on the MCG in a game in the late 1960s.
That's a crime of passion.
Ronnie got, I think, 6 weeks for that. For doing that. It's a great bit of film. It was captured on film, and it's it gets a run every so often.
Yeah.
But he made contact over this oversight, as did Professor Martin Delaticchi, who is the Director of Clinical Genetics at Austin Health.
Of course he is.
And obviously a big Carlton man. It was they who pointed out a glaring oversight that one Carlton Tony overlooked was Tony Pickett, the nippy wingman from North Launceston who wore the number 30 of the two weights, Vin and Jared, and who famously kicked 4 goals on debut for Carlton against Collingwood in the opening round of 1976 here. I think it was also the year that Phil Carman may have made his senior debut for the Magpies.
Wow.
And there's famous footage, Luke and I looked at it just before we came on air, Tone, of a massive all-in melee erupting pretty early in the piece. It was great. Carlton, Collingwood, yes, full on. But Tony Pickett was a very good player from North Launceston. Played probably, I'm guessing now, a handful of games, a few dozen games. Very honest wingman who had some success, I think, on his return to Tasmania in local Tasmanian footy. So to Trent and Professor Delaticchi, my humblest apologies for that severe oversight.
There we go. You have restored your honour, Tony DeVolfo. So congratulations. Yes, and we do endeavour. We make this pledge to everyone who listens to the Two Tones to check our facts henceforth and give you the most comprehensively researched podcast, football-related podcast, named after two people named Tony.
They're going over every word with a fine-tooth comb as we speak, Tone.
We've just got to send it to legals. We've just got to remember to do that, Tone. Now, there has been a bit of baby news. We'll just finish off with a bit of baby news, Tone. We must congratulate Daisy. It's been, a hell of a week for him, obviously. But him and his partner, Hayley, have welcomed the birth of their daughter, Matilda, which is a beautiful name.
Lovely name.
So she might get Tilly out of that.
Yes, yes. And Andrew Walker, his wife, Kylie, delivered Letty Shea, I think it is, yesterday morning. So all power to you, Walks, and Kylie on the safe arrival of Letty.
Now, could that be number one for Andrew Walker?
No, he's got a little boy. He's got two boys.
Excellent.
In fact,
so that's number three now.
Number three.
Excellent.
And a couple of those boys, or at least the oldest one, we often see in the rooms after the game laying into the pigskin, you know, in the warm-up area. I can recall Heath Scotland's boy being there, down there as well. So maybe they're Carlton players of the future. Tone, we can only hope.
I remember seeing many, many years ago, and I was lucky enough to get in the rooms to see Dean Rice's kids next to him also strapping his foot.
Yes.
Just watching his old man undo his bandages and stuff like that. I believe that was about 20 years ago.
Yeah, it marches on. It would be Bailey Rice, Dean's son, as you say, who is in the mix for the next national draft.
How about that?
And in actual fact has to make the decision between Carlton and St Kilda, Dean having played 100 games for both. Let's hope sanity prevails, Tony.
Yes, thank you.
He goes to the good guys, but let's wait on that one.
Now, here's how you feel old, Tony. I was going through a list of rookie drafts and that sort of thing at the Carlton Football Club, and I noticed the surname Gowers. Son of Premiership 1991 Premiership player Andy Gowers.
Yes.
Is in the mix here at Carlton.
Yes, Billy Gowers, son of Andy Gowers.
Yep.
Who I might say, Andy Gowers was on the Ghosts of Princes Park tour.
Yeah.
Over Christmas when, as part of the induction process for the new draftees, which Billy was one, all the new draftees and the player and their families.
Yep.
Took on the Ghosts tour.
Can you just give that a plug? Because that is an absolutely magnificent tour if you haven't done Ghosts of Princess Park tour.
Ghosts of Princess Park tour. Unfortunately, now it's in
hiatus.
What's the word? Hiatus.
Yeah.
We're hoping it'll be back when Daylight Savings picks up again later in the year. But it was actually a tour, a Tuesday night twilight tour of the old Carlton ground where we took members on a sentimental journey around the playing experiences of Princes Park, and we revisited famous moments in time that happened in various stages on the ground. Those moments, many of them are, revisited through audio and visual. And the lovely thing about that tour is that as you meander your way around the ground, you revisit these moments. People that are on the tour have their own unique memories of where they were at that time. And you hear these great stories.
Yeah.
You know, one fellow a few weeks ago had mentioned that he was here at the Bloodbath Grand Final, third branch up on an old peppercorn tree that was over near the old press box on the wing.
1945?
1945, he was here. So that was... The tours have been up and running now for, I think, the best part of 3 years.
And they are magnificent. If you haven't done one, I would, and you're a Carlton supporter... This is like a holy pilgrimage. It is a great thing to do. It is
back
a great
Mecca.
Night out. Yeah, it's wonderful. Now, you mentioned Andy Gowers was actually on that tour.
Andy Gowers was on the tour, and we were walking along the wing, infamous Melbourne Geelong interchange bench, where Andy Gowers stopped and thought for a moment. He said, I got reported on this problem. I can't remember now who it was he whacked, but he seemed to think that what he did was totally, above board and
of course,
didn't warrant him being booked.
No.
But it's funny, as you take players, former players and supporters through it, how moments in time and areas on the ground rejig these memories, from, 10, 20, 30 years ago, or even, 70 years ago, as it was the case with the Bloodbath.
Well, that's the power of that particular tour. And I guess the reason I brought Andy up was because I saw that name, I saw the father and thought, holy hell, I went to school with Andy.
Did
I remember
you really?
In 1983, we were at Burke Hall and he was teasing me about my football boots. So if you
what
want to...
What were you wearing?
I hadn't secured sponsorship by Nike or Adidas at that stage. Nike. I hadn't sponsored... I was not sponsored by Nike.
But maybe the Swiss were upside down. They'd been stitched on the wrong way.
That could have been it. But
were you a good player at Burke Hall?
No, I was. I was. What would you call? I was a spud. I was a cabbage. Let's be honest. Yeah. So I never really kicked on, as they say.
But a nice fellow, Andy Gowers, an absolutely
lovely
rap
bloke.
That
yeah.
Billy has found a home here at the Carlton Football Club, and let's hope we see him at some stage through the course of 2015.
Well, he's certainly got the lineage. So we wish him all the best.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. And just on the Goo Goo Blues, Tony, it'd be remiss of us not to mention that Mick Malthouse, the Carlton senior coach, welcomed a new family member this week with his granddaughter, born earlier this week. So that's another addition to the Malthouse clan.
No press conference in the maternity ward, I hope.
I believe that Mark Stevens had fronted for it, but was politely turned away.
Right, okay. On that note, we will end. We say go Blues for Friday at Domain Stadium versus West Coast. We hope it's another one of those great games that we can talk about years hence. Tony DiBolfo, great to have your company, as always, on the Two Tones. I've been Tony Moakley, and we will catch you next week.